Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Who hasn't asked for proof or claimed to have a theory or maybe defended their behavior as being hardwired? We've all done it. Were we using those terms correctly? Probably not. Today's show is all about our relationship with language, and we're kicking it off with Annalee Newitz. She's editor-in-chief at IO9, Gawker Media's science fiction blog. She asked a group of scientists about their pet peeves when it comes to misusing scientific terminology.
Well, one thing I want to say is that it's not that people are misusing these terms in everyday life. It's just that for scientists, a word like proof has a very different meaning from what we use in our everyday lives. And it's almost actually the opposite meaning. So when we say to each other, you know, do you have proof that this glass is full of ice? What we mean is there an absolute truth to that fact? You know, can you show me the glass of ice and, you know, measure it with some kind of measuring device and say, yes, it's full? But for a scientist, the thing is that you can never have something be absolutely true, because for a scientist, truth is something that you are constantly testing, and it's always based on gathering evidence. And that's something that's hard for us, because we want things to just be true or false.
Hmm. Another sort of sticky or gray area there is the idea of a theory. So what, Annalee, is the difference between a scientific theory and, say, having a theory about, you know, how the dog keeps getting out of the yard?
Right. So I think when we say theory in everyday life, we often mean, you know, I have rank speculation, or I just sort of pondered something and I'm not really sure if it's true. But for a scientist, a theory is about as close as you can get to something being true. You know, things like gravity are theories, even though, you know, 100% of the time when you drop an apple on someone's head, it will crash onto their head and probably make a bonking noise. It's still a theory because, well, for a scientist, you know, maybe there's some aberrant case in which dropping the apple wouldn't result in gravity pulling it down onto someone's head, in which case we want to be able to revise that theory. We don't want to say it's absolutely true, because that leaves us in a position of not being able to do science, because science is about questioning everything. But like I said, when you hear a scientist say that something is a theory, that basically means they think it's true. You know, they probably wouldn't admit it if you pushed them up against the wall. They'd say, well, but it could always maybe be proven false with other kinds of data. Although they probably wouldn't use the word proven. But but really, a theory is the word within science for truth, and which is really the opposite of how we use it in daily life.
Well, I guess that's the problem. There aren't a lot of absolutes in the way that scientists approach things. So what happens when we have words like natural and organic? These things get bandied about all the time, especially when it comes to food. But you can say that something is natural and be dangerous, like snake venom. So talk to me a little bit about the problem with how these two terms often get misused.
Yeah, and these were words that came up a lot when I talked to scientists, organic especially, because organic has a meaning in science, which is basically anything that contains carbon. So you could be munching on a pencil and having an organic breakfast. please don't do that. but you could be. But it also has a meaning outside of science. It has a meaning in marketing. Foods are marketed as organic, and that actually has a meaning. And various regulatory agencies have a meaning that they've assigned to organic for people who are growing food and raising animals. So those definitions, oftentimes when people use the marketing definition of organic, they mistake it for the scientific definition. They believe that there's some kind of scientific verification that whatever they're eating is healthy, which is absolutely not true. There is no scientific notion of healthier food that is natural or organic. And if you talk to scientists who study biology, what they'll tell you is that, in fact, sometimes when things are natural, which is to say naturally occurring, they are very dangerous. Snake venom is a great example. Many kinds of poisons are absolutely natural. Don't eat deadly spiders is a really good piece of advice, even though they're absolutely natural and might fit the definition of organically farmed. But at the same time, lots of things that are unnatural, lots of medicines that we've invented, for example, insulin, those are things that are synthetic, and they're, of course, quite beneficial. And so the idea that you can divide the world into things that are bad and synthetic and good and natural or good and organic is profoundly unscientific. Like I said, it's perfectly legitimate as a marketing term, but please don't get it confused with science. And I think many scientists would rest easier if they knew that we were refusing to confuse those ideas.
And Annalee Newitz is straightening us out. She's talked to a number of scientists about some of their pet peeves or some of the terminology that gets thrown around in our daily language that has supposedly scientific meaning, but is probably not being used in quite the right way. Well, let's get to one other one, learned versus innate. Why does evolutionary biologist Marlene Zuk, I'm assuming that's how you say her name, have to say about her pet misuse?
So Marlene is an evolutionary biologist. So she deals all the time with people saying that certain traits, like personality traits or skills, are things that are just innate, meaning that somehow some people are just born with certain abilities and other abilities are learned as we grow up. It's kind of a nature versus nurture idea. The terms get thrown around a lot in the media. You hear a lot about certain traits being learned versus certain traits being innate. And the fact is that what we know now from evolutionary biology is that it's very, very difficult to separate those two things out. There's a lot of traits, everything from diseases to skill sets that you may be born with a genetic predilection for, but you'd need a specific environment to activate that genetic sequence of events. And so the interaction between our genes and our environment is very complex, and it's something that we still don't entirely understand. But what we do know is that you really can't say that there's any particular skill that is learned versus innate. It's not a realistic distinction. And so it just drives evolutionary biologists nuts when you say things like, this is a hardwired skill, or women are just hardwired to feel a certain way, and you know, men are just hardwired to do something else. Those are all meaningless terms scientifically. There's no hardwired, unless you're talking about things like being hardwired to breathe, in which case, okay, roll with that.
All right. I'm going to say guilty on a couple of counts. How about you? Fess up. Have you been misusing any of these terms, Annalee?
I think the one that I misused the most is a mathematical term, actually the term statistically significant, which for a really long time, I thought that that just meant that it was something that was significant, you know, and it turns out, actually, as the mathematician I spoke with, Jordan Ellenberg, said, actually, really, it should be more like statistically noticeable or discernible. It just means anything that is more noticeable than zero. So it can be something that's, you know, a tiny fraction of a percentage point away from zero in order to be statistically significant. So that's one thing that I really had to change my thinking about.
There are others on the list: gene, survival of the fittest, quantum weirdness that we are not going to get to. But Annalee, I want to thank you for bringing us through those that are significant, statistically discernible anyway.
Thank you very much for having me.
Annalee Newitz, editor-in-chief at IO9, Gawker Media Science and Culture Blog. She's also author of Scatter, Adapt, and Remember: How Humans Will Survive a Mass Extinction. We were talking about her article, 10 Scientific Ideas Scientists Wish You Would Stop Misusing. You can find a link to read that for yourself at wordofmouthradio.org.